Welcome to another edition of the TDN Writers Room podcast. My name is Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the TDN, also co-host the Down the Stretch radio show with Dave Johnson on Sirius XM Radio.
How y'all doing? Good to see you again, Skipper Bill. I'm first mate Randy Moss with NBC Sports, decompressing still from Breeders' Cup weekend.
Zoe Cabman here with First Racing and XBTV. Delighted to see that the Coolmore Snipers have not got to Randy Moss this week after last week's rant. And stay tuned because we have another one coming up in approximately 35 minutes. So don't zoom forward, but Randy's on a rant, just letting
another
you know.
Rant. Yeah,
we can't wait for that. I want to remind everybody that our show is sponsored by Keeneland each and every week. And also, we're going to have some special year-end shows. And one of them, we want to answer questions from viewers and listeners to the podcast. Questions on anything related to horse racing, you could give them to all three of us. You could ask Zoe something about her riding careers, something that a jockey would know about. So send those questions to Sue Finley at thetdn.com. Once again, Sue Finley at thetdn.com, and we will try to get your questions in. It should be fun listening to our viewers and seeing what they have to say.
Questions I always get, Bill, is has Randy given you that bottle of wine yet? That's like one of the questions for me. Just throwing that in there.
All right. Well, has he?
No. He has not. And I pay my bets. I just haven't been able to do that yet.
Okay. Well, you couldn't have brought her. Couldn't have just done it at the Breeders' Cup. You guys were together for a couple of days.
Well, I didn't want to bug him because him and Jerry had work to do.
And every time she saw me, I was carrying 50 pounds of papers. So it was no time.
All right. Guys, as usual, there's not much of intrigue or suspense about the Eclipse Awards, with a couple of perhaps categories that are still to be decided. I did a column in today's TDN saying that Kenny McPeak should be the trainer of the year over Chad Brown. And I said that even though Chad Brown has $29 million in earnings, 46 graded stakes races, and Ken McPeak has $14.4 million in earnings and 8 graded stakes races. But I'll put it this way. 10 years from now, no one's going to look back on 2024 and say, wasn't that the year Chad Brown won $30 million and ran 1, 2, 3, 4 in the Diana? No. They'll be saying, remembering what a year Ken McPeak had and what a special thing that he did with not only Torpedo Anna, but with Mystic Dan. He's a guy who's good for the game. He cares about the sport. And his accomplishments this year are worth, to me, an Eclipse Award.
I can't argue with you. I definitely can't argue with you. Now, if you go by the numbers, Chad Brown to this point has won 204 races from 865. Kenny McPeak has won 75 for 542. But, you know, the fact that winning the Derby and the Oaks in the same year, no one's done it since Ben Jones. It's pretty amazing when you really, really think about it. Because, you know, horse racing, especially with Eclipse Award voting, is always, what have you done for me lately? You know, you kind of got to rack your brains. Oh, God, yeah, Mystic Dan won the Derby. It seems like so long ago that people forget. Now, if he was still running now, and Kenny McPeak said he might run once before the end of the year. I don't know what in, but there was a quote from him saying that. It's, what have you done for me lately? And I guarantee you could ask a bunch of people who won the Derby this year, and they'd have to think about it. They really would.
Yeah, I mean, you don't necessarily want to penalize success like Chad Brown has had. And if people vote for Chad Brown, I'm not going to look at him and say, man, you screwed up. You made a mistake. You shouldn't have voted for Chad. You should have voted for Ken McPeak. But in the era of the super trainer, if we just go by purse money won, graded stakes won, grade one stakes won, then every year you're going to have either Chad Brown or Todd Pletcher or Bob Baffert or Brad Cox, basically. So when you get a year in which somebody does something extra special, right? I mean, I voted for John Sadler when Flightline had his big year, right? But here you've got a case where you've got the first trainer to sweep the Derby and the Oaks since 1952, right? You've got a guy that's trains who's almost certainly going to be Horse of the Year in Torpedo Anna, a Breeders' Cup winner, his first Breeders' Cup winner in the Distaff. And, you know, I mean, oh, by the way, he won the biggest race in America with Mystic Dan. So I think all of that, to me, is enough to, you know, break from the usual method of selecting the Eclipse Award winning trainer and give it to Ken McPeak. I totally agree with you, Bill.
Hell, Chad Brown might even vote for him. Oh, no, let's not go overboard. It's now, a good resume.
Here's another race, and this one is really fascinating. Fierceness versus Sierra Leone for the three-year-old championship. This is how evenly matched they are. Sierra Leone was 3-for-7 on the year with 2 grade 1 victories and 1 grade 2 victory. Fierceness was 3-for-6 on the year with 2 grade 1 victories and the same thing, 1 grade 2. They raced against each other 4 times. Sierra Leone finished ahead of Fierceness twice. Fierceness finished ahead of Sierra Leone twice. I mean, you can't get more evenly matched than that. It's splitting hairs. And just like Randy said about, I wouldn't be mad at anybody who voted for Chad Brown for trainer. I wouldn't fault anybody for voting for Fierceness. But to me, that Sierra Leone won on the biggest day and the showdown, even though Fierceness had this bad trip and was probably best, I got to go with Sierra Leone.
Yeah, maybe. I have no problem with this vote. I think Fierceness was the best horse in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And I think 4 times out of 5, when they run against each other, Fierceness is going to have the advantage just because of his running style compared to Sierra Leone's running style. But yes, they split 2-2 in head-to-head matchups. And the 2 races in which Sierra Leone finished ahead of Fierceness happened to be the 2 biggest races in America, the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic. And to me, that's enough to give the Eclipse Award to Sierra Leone.
Absolutely. And I simply put it down, you definitely hold more credence towards the Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic. He won the Classic, and maybe he could have, should have won the Derby given a straight trip. So it's a slam dunk for me with Sierra Leone. Can you hear those dogs? Those are the tiniest little goddamn Yorkies you've ever seen in your life. And they yap like lions. Can you hear me?
Hey, we got a half Yorkie back here now. Let's not denigrate the Yorkies. Lucy, don't listen to that.
Yeah, but it's the other half that makes her wonderful.
True. It's the poo part.
Yeah.
Let me bring up one more point about this, and Zoe, you can answer this. I think we all agree that the horse that ran the best race in the Classic was Fierceness for the kind of trip that he had. I think people that are voting for Fierceness are saying, wait a minute, even though he got beat in the Breeders' Cup, he was the best horse. Is that an appropriate way to look at it? It isn't to me. I don't care who had what kind of trip. What matters to me is who had their nose on the finish line first.
I mean, you've got to add in that Fierceness threw in a duck egg for the Kentucky Derby. That's really the clincher right there in my mind. That's the separator between the two of them.
Yeah. So I got 3 other divisions for you here, Bill. I mean, what do you do for champion older male? Ooh. What do you do for champion female sprinter? And what would you do for champion male turf horse?
I haven't even got there.
Boy, I haven't. champion male turf horse, I guess, is Rebel's Romance. And the other ones, I gotta take a pass. I need to get out that Randy Moss box of 8,000 papers and start going through them.
Yeah. So I mean, Rebel's Romance is probably going to win, but you know, whereas I think we talked about last week with Moira, the Sovereign Awards in Canada have a thing where you have to run at least 3 times in Canada, yes, right, to be considered.
Yes.
The way I vote, unless it's just there's no other option, I prefer for a horse to make at least 2 starts in North America before I vote for him for an Eclipse Award. And Rebel's Romance only had 1. So I'm going to vote for More Than Looks, even though she only had like 3 races in the calendar year 2024. He did. He won the Breeders' Cup Mile against competition that was comparable to what Rebel's Romance faced in the Breeders' Cup Turf. Older male, Okay. You've got National Treasure. You've got Senor Buscador. You've got Subsanador. And you've got Newgate. That's really your options.
Yeah, that's a pretty weak group.
And I think National Treasure has the edge in, yeah, in several different things there, right? And Zoe, female sprinter, Soul of an Angel. They were all on the track together. Society, Vava, Ways and Means.
It's a tough one. There's not really a standout there. I mean, I'd have a tough time giving it to Soul of the Angel, Soul of an Angel, but she beat all of them on the biggest day. But what else did she do? A couple of grade threes. It's really, really tough. We're going to have to delve a little deeper.
Yeah. Society was obviously narrowly beaten in second. She might wind up getting it. Ways and Means ran what, fifth, and Vava beat one horse. So it would be tough to, you know, really throw their hat in the ring with any sort of conviction. So I think it's either going to be Soul of an Angel based on the Breeders' Cup alone. She is 3-for-3 this year on one turn.
Yeah.
Or Society, for her overall accomplishments during the year.
I'd probably go with Society, to be perfectly honest. And that's no slight against Soul of an Angel whatsoever.
Yeah.
Do want to remind you that the TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by Keeneland. This Thursday, November the 14th, is the Keeneland November Horses of Racing Age sale, and supplements will be considered up until sale date. Now, I've been rallying through this on my iPad, and there are an awful lot of horses, and you do not want to miss it. Here are 10 more new faces who have just been entered. And as the Keeneland November sale starts to wrap up, you can check out all the supplements to the Horses of Racing Age catalog at november.keeneland.com.
Looking for bloodstock that shapes the world? You can find it here. Foundation mares that will shape the breed. Weanlings with prime potential. Your next moment in the winner's circle. It's all waiting for you here at the World's Marketplace. Keeneland November Breeding Stock Sale, where the future is found. Beginning Tuesday, November 5th.
This week's Fastest Horse of the Week brought to you by Life is Good, one of those fast sires at Windstar Farm. And not just Life is Good was good. His first weanlings are pretty darn good, too. In fact, he had the session topping weanling, they probably told him this at the farm, he probably already knows this, but if you're watching, congratulations on back-to-back days at Keeneland November. First of all, on day two, a filly, if you're keeping score at home, hip number 287, sold for $410,000. The next day, day three, he had won a colt, a hip 1050, that sold for an even $400,000. In all, Life is Good's weanlings are averaging $326,000, and he stands at Windstar Farm Into Mischief's Fastest Son for a fee of $75,000. Now, the Fastest Horse of the Week ran on Saturday at Aqueduct. It's not Belmont at Aqueduct anymore. It's just plain Aqueduct now. And that would be Integration, the winner of the Mile and Three-Eighths Red Smith. And boy, did he look visually impressive, exploding through the lane to draw off and win by two lengths. Ridden by Flavian Pratt, his second win of calendar year 2024. Integration, I'm talking about, a son of Quality Road, who earned a buyer speed figure of 100, the only triple-digit buyer of the week. Integration, our Fastest Horse of the Week.
Welcome in now. This week's guest of the weekend is bloodstock agent David Ngordo. He also is the runs the bloodstock division at Lane's End. David, plenty to talk to you about, but I'm sure everybody wants to get right to one of the highlights of your career. You're the guy who found Flightline and picked him out. Tell us what you remember about him. What caught your eye at the sale? And he went for $1 million. Were you anywhere close to throwing in the towel, or would you guys have kept going for a while?
Well, so the answer, it's multi. I'll give you a couple of points on this, because I was invited out to Jane Lyon's farm, the breeder, Summerwind, back in January with Bill Farish of Flightline's Yearling Year. And we actually looked at a horse that became Tappet. What was his name? Shoot, I'm drawing a blank on his name. But there was another Tappet there that we were shown that was a half American Pharaoh. And I liked the horse that is Flightline better. And I kind of said something under my breath and Bill Ferris kicked me. Look at the other horse. You know, that's who we're here to see. And, you know, we got back in the car and I said, you know, for what it's worth, I like the bay one. The other horse was Chestnut. So we went out there several times over the next several months and I kept liking the other horse. And when we went to Saratoga, they still had the Tech Sutton plane. And I got in the back of the plane and one of the attendants said, hey, these are your all's yearlings in the back. It got bumpy. So I put a shank on one. I'm petting a horse and he had the name on his halter. He came named. It was Flightline. So when we got there, Bill's like, hey, there's the horse you like. I said, let's buy him. And we put something together and the rest is history. And to answer your question, I think we were just getting started when we bid and we got fortunate that at $1 million, the bidding stopped.
So you've picked out a lot of really good horses in your day, probably none faster than Flightline. And now you've got Flightline babies that are coming of age. And you just purchased the first Flightline foal to come to auction at Fasig Tipped in November for $675,000. What did you see in that foal in particular? Did he remind you of Flightline? And what are you seeing from the Flightline foals in general?
You know, I like it when a stallion stamps his offspring because the whole point of a stallion is to dominate. You know, we're hoping that those genes that made him such a great racehorse come through in the offspring. So I like the fact that they look like him. And he seems to, if you give him a mare, he seems to dominate the mare, whether she's a small mare, big mare, he seems to impart the Flightline look on them. I'd seen that foal that we bought on the farm. He was raised here at Lane's End. I'm sitting in their office. And, you know, he was one of the top ones I saw. And then there were several others we tried to bid on. There was another beautiful filly that scratched that I thought was as good a horse as weanling as I've seen all year, whether at a sale or privately on farm. So the thing about Flightline I like and liked about the foal we bought was that he's stamping them. And this one reminded me a lot of Flightline at that stage of his life.
Was that the plan going in? Because we always see people with new stallions that they need to support them. They need to get the mares. They need to support buying the babies as well. Was that the plan going in to like purchase the first one for a specific group?
Yeah, the plan was to go see them all the farms, which we did. And then the ones that we liked to make a big play to buy them at the sales ring. You know, we're not clearly done because there'll be a lot more to come at the yearling sales, but we believe in the horse. You know, we're not asking anybody to believe in a horse we don't believe in. So we're putting our money where our mouths proverbially are. And, you know, we expect to buy more and try to get as many that make sense price-wise as we can.
David, you're not a one-trick wonder. You also found Zenyatta. So let's go through the same timeline and same story about her that we just asked you about Flightline. Where, when, how, and why?
You know, I walked out to the sales that year. Zenyatta was a yearling. I actually have the catalog behind me I saved with my notes in it. And, you know, we go through and we shortlist and we saw her. And, you know, buying horses for trainers, it is a lot like recruiting for any sports team. You know, if you have a certain kind of offense, you need a certain kind of player. You know, Zenyatta was that year, those horses were being bought for Mr. Moss to go to John Sheriff's. And Zenyatta looked like a John Sheriff's horse. I fell in love with her. She had that skin disease that's now famous that on a scale of 1 to 10 is a minus a half of a problem. And I just think it was meant to be there. You know, at the end of the day, I can say it now because the breeders passed away. We had a lot more money for Zenyatta than $60,000. And I told Eric Kronfeld that one time over a couple of bourbons. I said, you know, we really had more money and we laugh. But, you know, it was meant to be. And she was, you know, they talk about horse of a lifetime. You say, well, there's Zenyatta. And I never thought it would get better than that. Now here's Flightline. But, you know, Zenyatta is your first. So I think she holds a special place, you know, in my heart and in my career. And I'm hoping to get one more because now I have a wife that's a trainer, so I have to do it for her. So I got to try for a three-peat.
More about Cherie in a minute. I want to ask you one more flight line question. It's quite the daily double, by the way, Zenyatta to flight line. One of the things that always interested me about flight line was his pedigree, the fact that he's by Tappet. And we've seen, obviously, Tappet become one of the great sires of the last 20 years, in part tremendous amount of determination and athleticism to his offspring. We've also seen that Tappets can be challenging to train from a temperamental point of view. Flightline didn't seem to have any of that, or maybe it just sort of got brushed under the rug and he was so fast that nobody ever talked about it. What was his demeanor like compared to a lot of these other Tappets that you see?
Well, what I love about what we do is these horses, we purchase them, then they go into the family, if you will. So this horse went down to Mayberry's. We bought him in Saratoga. He came to Lane's End for a little while. Then he went down to Jeannie April and Summer Mayberry. April's in charge down there of all the horses that I buy. And, you know, the horse never had a bad day as far as that goes. We all Tappets come with a warning label, and he didn't have that. You know, very easy to break. Everything went right. Everything went smooth, except the day he ended up hurting his butt on the latch. And it was just one of those things. It wasn't you wouldn't expect this horse to blow out a candle after he trained. He never, you know, took any bad step. You know, it was just one of those horses that you knew he was there because he cost $1 million, but it wasn't like his behavior was ever bad. He was a model patient. You know, it took 90 days or something to heal. And then, you know, went out to Sadler and, again, never much complaint. He's high energy. He feels good. But a lot of horses do that. There was no, you know, bad, you know, traits that you go, oh, my God, he was a pain to train. You know, John is I talk to John every day about the horse. There was no, God, David, you sent me this, you know, beast and I it's a workers' comp issue or something. You know, the horse was mellow and good and he put it all in his training. All in his running. And again, you know, we talk about stallions. All the foals seem to have good minds. So, you know, maybe he's just such a unique individual. You know, he's going to impart all this. And he had a great mind. You know, maybe that's what it's going to be. I don't know. But he wasn't what we're calling a typical Tappet. And by the way, I love Tappet. So if they have any kind of mental whatever, I'm willing to deal with it. It's just like Flightline, as would anybody else that buys them or trains them.
We really should play the Flightline drinking game. You could start with the bottles behind you because we're going to talk about him a lot. How encouraged are you, even though you didn't buy him, by what his brother has done already? He's on the comeback, Eagles Flight, because that's got to help Flightline along the line as well.
Well, technically we did buy him because we put the partnership together to buy him, but it didn't go through the ring. But he's the same way. He went from Jane's Farm down to Mayberry. He's a little different type, but still a handsome horse. And he's done everything right, too. It's just the family might have to be a little patient with. But is he Flightline? There'll be very few that are ever Flightline. But he's showing us what Flightline did as well.
Is that something that might worry you a little bit, the fragility factor? I mean, he was brilliant, but he needed time between his brilliance.
Well, I talked to John about this a lot. And John said, what do you want me to do, David? Run him in the grade 3 Palace Birdies to get him ready for the Met Mile? You know, what do we need to do it for? And so, you know, I'm going to be defensive because he's like part of family, Flightline. Right. You know, that injury to his hindquarter, there's only one picture of it. It's on my phone. As fate would have it, I was there that day that it happened. And it was a pretty serious, you know, muscle injury. So there was that. And then some things just took time. And in the world we live in, if we're talking about horsemanship, sometimes horses take time. So, you know, if we want to do the right by them and not, you know, do all the injections and all the things we'll probably talk about if we talk about Heiser World, you know, that horsemanship requires, Flightline's a poster child for good horsemanship. and giving a horse time, knowing when to push, knowing when to not.
David, you mentioned earlier that you're married to a trainer. That would be Cherie DeVoe, who's obviously a rising star in her profession. Tell me how you guys work together. You know, what does she do for you, and what do you do for him, for her?
I'm very obedient. So I,
good trade in a husband.
Yeah. No, so we're married, right? Obviously, we're contractually obligated. I joke to one another now, but she's a horse trainer. I do my job. She does hers. I was broken by Bobby Frankel. I watched my family work together. I've watched my mother and John. I deal with John Sadler. I deal with Shook. I've dealt with a lot of horse trainers. Cherie happens to be my wife, but she's a horse trainer first. So I show her the same respect that I'd show any horse trainer I deal with. She does the same for me. We did lay it out a little bit because you don't want a problem at work to end up with me sleeping on the couch. not her, mind you, me. We laid out the groundwork early on for whatever direction the business went. And she knows what I need out of it. And I know what she needs out of it from a professional standpoint. She's brilliant with her help. She's brilliant with the horses. And she owners love her. I try to handle the back room for her. I'm the one to make sure there's money in the payroll account and things like that on the business side. But her horses, her clients, that's her jurisdiction. My side of it is, I obviously buy horses. We put partnerships together. If she needs any help, I do it just as I have for other trainers. If there's an owner that I have a better rapport with, sometimes she'll call me and I talk to them. And that's the same thing I would do for John Sadler, John Sheriffs, Shug, McGahey with Asmussen. It's the job I do. And I'm a pro trainer agent. I hate that word agent, but that's what I am. I'm a pro trainer. I support the trainer. I know how difficult their job is. I respect their job. So, we try to make sure we each do our part. And it's very delineated. She called me today at 8, I dropped my daughter off of school and says, we got two horses working at 8 o'clock. I'll come watch them. I'll either take a video or she does. And then if it's my client, I let them know. If it's something I bought, she knows I'm interested because I'm always trying to learn what I did wrong. And I do plenty wrong. don't buy that kind again. So we work well together. Not going to tell you we've never had a disagreement or that I don't get told to stay in my lane. Mm-hmm. But that's every trainer will tell guys like me that are, agents or help manage their owners. Sometimes that happens. But overall, I think we work well together and, I'm very proud of her accomplishments.
So what you just said brings up a couple of questions in my mind. First of all, you mentioned money in the account. We hope you bet on more than looks in the Breeders' Cup Mile.
Yeah. And I have a great friend of mine, Dan Silver. We bet a lot and we had some pick six, pick five. And I said, listen, I need you to put a large sum on more than looks. He said, to win? I said, yeah, to win. And the biggest mistake I made is Sadler told me Full Serrano win the mile as soon as he got the draw. And I effed it up that I just didn't do a double. And I bet. I send it in. I'm not afraid to bet. But we did very, very well on more than looks. And everybody complains about morning lines, right? And Randy, you'll probably appreciate this. When I see 20-1, Cherie goes, don't they respect my horse? I'm like, this is phenomenal. I get so happy that he's 20-1, But obviously didn't end up at that price. But yeah, no, I bet. And, I thought we could win with Vava. I thought more than looks should win. And text some of my gambling buddies, that was exactly how we handicapped it out.
So you also mentioned that you're pro trainer. You served on the Horsemen's Advisory Committee for HISA. And we've talked a lot on this podcast about HISA over the last couple of years. And, one of the things we always stressed right from the beginning was that the success or failure of HISA was going to come down in large part to the changes that they were willing to make as HISA progressed and some of the problems became apparent, because we all knew there would be problems. It's such a far-reaching bit of legislation. What do you see right now in where HISA is as we speak and where you hoped that it would be right about now?
You know, everything you said is 100% correct. And I would commend Lisa Lazarus quite a bit. I don't know there's anybody in our industry could have helped get where we are today better than her. I mean, she stood up to a lot of pressure on both sides and is, I'll call it, wise and takes counsel when the horsemen come to her. And there's a number of people. If anybody ever says, oh, she doesn't call me back or whatever, I've never had that experience. I've sent over 20 people with complaints, criticism, suggestions to her. She answers the phone. And I think we've moved not where it needs to be, but we've got the pendulum going in the right direction to get this, you know, right for the horsemen and women that want to do it for owners. It is not perfect. And there are things we could go on a whole 3-hour podcast and talk about things need fixing, but it's coming, it's getting there. And the Horsemen's Advisory Group deserves a lot of credit. There's some people, you know, it's a large group, but there's probably 10 people that spend 2 to 3 hours a day wow, on this, working on it, phone calls to each other, getting the right critical support, doing the right research. We just don't go, this is stupid, this is terrible. You know, we sit down and we find a problem and we come with a solution. And, you know, it's a law, so you've got to work through that. And we don't have any voting power. You know, the Horsemen Advisory Group is a lobbying arm, if you will. That's my term. You know, we go in and we sit down with the people, the powers that be, and we testify in front of these. You know, HIWU has the anti-doping medication control group, or they have the safety side of it on HISA. We go and we talk about issues, and we have to debate, you know, the head of UC Davis, the head of Cornell, and get them to see our side of it. And a lot of people have rolled up their sleeves, and, you know, people you would never think would go in or make the time have. So I'm proud of what that group has done. It's worked together. HISA's done something that we probably couldn't have done anyways, unite horsemen behind something good or bad, you know, to make change. And it's not there yet. It needs to keep going. But I have faith that it will.
Horsemen love to bitch and moan. We all do. If you could wave your magic wand, Dave, and fix one thing in the industry, be it HISA, HBPA, anything, what would it be?
Wow, that's a great question. I love racing. And without racing, we have none of this. We have no sales. We have no stallion farms. There's no Lane's End. We need to kind of end this civil war we have on these subjects and sit down and use some practical common sense, get people in the room that know what is right and wrong. You know, there's horse health and there's doping. There's two different things. Yeah. There's horse safety and there's, you know, this very too much left on, you know, some of the vetting issues and things. You know, we need to get everybody there. We need to realize it and then put the guns on the table and go back to promoting the sport. You know, a lot of our clients are new people in it. There's plenty of people that have an interest in this. Instead of shooting ourselves in the foot as an industry, we can't bury problems, but let's acknowledge some of the good things. Let's try to promote those. Let's go out there on these great days and show people how fun it is. You have professional athletes that have won the biggest prizes in the real world, you know, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, and they're coming and telling you, hockey, this is the best drug I can't buy winning, you know? And I'm like, a guy said that to me. We won a race on Derby Day, new owner, plenty of funds, successful man in the real world. And he said, David, I've done some drugs in my life. And I'm laughing when he starts this. I'm like, oh my God, where's this going? He said, this is the best high I've ever had. Winning on Derby Day, winning a grade one. And I'm like, wow, that maybe is not the story I'm going to tell, in an advertisement, you know, on NBC or something, but it's a great point. You know, I think we've heard, the guys that own Door Knock, you know, they've won a World Series and they're saying this is bigger than that emotionally for them. Those are huge statements. I mean, huge, huge statements. And to promote those positives, we can all have rivalries. If we don't have a sport, we don't have it anymore. So I think we need to get back to promoting the sport, the beauty of it. The horse is an amazing animal, that type of thing. So long story, it would be a very long magic wand, Zoe, I'd be waving, but that's the whole thing.
When did you start going by Mr. DeVoe? Before or after the Breeders' Cup?
No, it was before. I was at Saratoga and a gentleman walks up and says, excuse me, I want to get a picture. And I'm looking for Todd Pletcher or somebody. And Cherie was, you know, walking up in front after a race. And I said, with her? He says, yeah, yeah. I said, well, here. I say, Cherie, turn around. And the guy hands me the stuff. And he says, Mr. DeVoe, would you hold this for me? So, you know, he had like a cooler or something. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll hold it for you. So it stuck. And, you know, I always joked if she won an Oaks or a Derby, I'd change my last name. So fortunately, it was a Breeders' Cup and not the Oaks or Derby. I'd have to change my name for all the things I do.
One more thing. Talk a little bit about your team, because you do have a big team that we see with you at all the sales.
Yeah, so I was fortunate that the generation before us took an interest in me and taught me. And one thing that I promised I would do, if there were young people that were interested, I would give them an opportunity. So, you know, we have a lot of interns that are unpaid. Some are, you know, and we try to teach them. And if they're willing to put in the work, I'm willing to help them. So some of the guys are learning. And some of them are actually helping me. But, you know, I've got young Will Farish, you know, Bill's son, who's a great young guy that I think's a future leader. You know, I joke with him all the time. You know, you're going to be the king one day. You need to learn about your people. You could be up in the ivory tower or not. And Will is a man of the people. I respect that about him. There's no pretense, no airs with him. I've got another young guy named Fernando Lafond-Paris. His dad is Carlos Lafond-Paris and his grandmother's Cricket Head. So therefore his great grandfather's Alec Head. He's about as well-bred as Flightline is. And, you know, he sent me an email and I said, okay, you know, come on over. And he's great. You know, it's another young man named Ray Smoot. You know, he's a very bright guy, wanted to learn it. And he literally works for free to come around. And I've got Casey Klein from the Klein family in Louisville.
I know Casey.
Yeah. Casey is, I joke with him, it's like when you're in a fraternity, you need a guy to boost a GPA. He's as smart a young guy as I've met. And he continues to amaze me with the things he picks up on. And these are all future leaders, you know, and we've had a lot of other people come through our ranks that have gone on to do other things. So, you know, I'm try to give back in that way. You know, and I've got obviously April Mayberry and those people. Joe Pickrell helps me, Tanya Jurgens, Lisa McGreevy. You know, over the years we've had some others in there, and you know, you can't do it on your own. I look at anywhere from 700 to 1,000 yearlings for the September sale on the farms, but that's only, you know, 25% of the catalog. So all these people helped me get through it. And without them, we couldn't do it. And I think they feel part of the team also. One of the key players in our organization is Gretchen Feld, who keeps all those young guys we talked about in line and mostly me in line. And without her, we couldn't do it because she was checking to make sure that this was all set up right before we got on. So I can't do a lot without Gretchen, and she's a cornerstone of the whole business that we have.
And what about Rupert? Where's Rupert?
Oh, well, Rupert is back here. And he's like the Bush's baked bean dog. I'm glad he can't talk because he hears a lot of things. But, you know, Rupert, it's funny. I never wanted a dog, and I would give Rupert my kidney if he needed it, you know. So he's my man, and he's part of the flight line story at the end of the day. That's why John Sadler thanked Rupert at the Eclipse Awards. Because Rupert was supposed to be John Sadler's dog, and COVID hit, and he never got the dog. So he met Flightline and Rupert on the same day. And he said, "This dog likes me." I said, "You can take that horse. You can't take this dog."
That's awesome.
That's true. True story.
Very good. Well, David, thanks so much for being our guest of the week. Congratulations on all the success you've had, and congratulations on becoming Mr. DeVoe as well.
We're very progressive.
There you go. There'll be a lot worse things, David. Yeah. Again, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The TD and Writers Room also brought to you by the PHBA, the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. Pennsylvania-bred Foxy Jr. ran her record this year to 6 wins and 7 starts when she won the 38 Go-Go Stakes at Laurel on Saturday. She was the 8-5 favorite. She's a 4-year-old filly owned and bred by Diane Stern. And in the sales ring, Pennsylvania breds were also popular, namely one that we've talked about a lot on this podcast. Roses for Deborah, the daughter of Liam's Map, went through the ring during the opening session of Keeneland November. And Mandy Pope bought Roses for Deborah for $2.4 million. To learn more about the Pennsylvania Bred program, you can go to pabred.com or you can call area code 610-444-1050.
PA Bred, I think we've built a brand at this point.
It's excitement at every step.
Roses for Deborah just set a new track record.
On average, for the past decade, Pennsylvania paid over $28 million a year in breeders' awards, restricted races, and owner bonuses. Plus, PA Bred shine on the world's biggest stage. Just 3 states have bred more Breeders' Cup winners. Learn more at pabred.com.
Be a smarter better with XBEED TV. The best horses. With thousands of exclusive morning workouts. All at your fingertips and delivered right into your inbox. Everything you need to be informed. Be smart. Bet smart with XBEED TV.
All right, let's move on. The TDN Writers Room is also brought to you by XBTV. And since we talked so much about Flightline, we really should have played the drinking game. We talked an awful lot about Flightline with David and Gordo earlier. This week's XBTV Work of the Week is from one of the most highly anticipated horses out there. His name is Eagles Flight, seen working here a half mile on Thursday at Santa Anita in 47-3. And I'm not sure you can go any easier than this. You can see Abdul Al-Sagor, his regular work rider, absolutely swinging off him. Eagles Flight is the full brother to the 2022 Horse of the Year Flightline, and has only made 1 start. That was back in May, winning a Santa Anita maiden race. He is expected to start at the upcoming Santa Anita meeting, most likely in the Grade 1 Malibu Stakes.
So we talked a lot to David and Gordo about his role with Heise and the Horseman's Advisory Group. And Heise was in the news. And this is, I think, something that was long overdue. I wish they would have done it sooner, but I'm glad they're doing it now. They got rid of this provisional suspension. So what that means is if trainer X gets caught on a Monday with a drug that is not allowed, on Tuesday they're suspended. And then they have to clear their name before they can come back. And, you know, the cliche was guilty until proven innocent. And I think that not only did that rub a lot of people the wrong way, I still go back. This is my number one complaint about Heise, is that they went after and got some people through their methods of provisional suspensions and drug testing and whatnot that just don't cheat. That, you know, guys winning 6-7 races a year, you know, and they caused a lot of problems for these people. They did the right thing here. And what David and Gordo said is they're, you know, they're still trying to you know, get things, pull everything together. I wish they would have done this a lot sooner, but it's good to see that, you know, they are making the right decisions. That's also good to see that when people point out to them that, hey, this might not be the best way to do this, they listen.
I could not agree more. And David and Gordo didn't mention provisional suspensions directly, but I think it was probably high on his list of things that he was glad to see get done, among other things that he thinks need to be done in the future. I think a lot of it has to do with the realization that, you know, there are just so many cases of contamination out there with positive tests, right? I mean, unfortunately, there is human drug use on the backstretch at American racetracks, maybe even a higher percentage than you would find elsewhere normally in society. And it's just impossible to completely ignore the prospect of inadvertent contamination from human to horse when you have people working the closest with the horses who may be recreational drug users. And there's some other forms of contamination as well that that have come to the forefront. So, well, I think it's good, obviously, that HISA is willing to be flexible and is willing to say, okay, maybe we were overstepping here a little bit. Let's put a hold on this until we can get a little bit of a firmer grip on what we're going to do about all these issues of obvious contamination.
For sure, because in this age of super testing, like just 3 days ago, a friend of mine sent me a picture of someone in the detention barn, I'm not going to say where, peeing in the stall 3 days ago. It's still going on. That is human contamination number one. And then you got a horse that's going to go in there. You don't know what this guy's been doing 3 days ago. So, yes, I mean, they need to kind of start there. It's tough policing people. It's a very, very hard thing to do. And the training wheels are still on, but hopefully one day we'll get to take them off and it'll be smooth sailing. That would be nice.
In Heiss's defense, I mean, we know that you can have the worst doper out there, the trainer that's the most, you know, despicable horse doper of all. And when he gets a positive test, the first thing he's going to do is cry contamination. That's what they're going to do. That's what they've always done. It's what they always will do. So HISA was trying to come up with a way to mitigate those sort of circumstances. Unfortunately, it's a very fine line to try to walk, and that's what they're trying to deal with right now.
Well, also some good news this week in horse racing when they announced that Sierra Leone will be coming back to run next year. We already know that Fierceness is coming back to run next year. Mora, who was sent over to Australia, perhaps her racing days are not done. Matter of fact, in a story I did for the TDN, the Australian stud farm that purchased her said they may even send her back to North America to run, which would be fantastic. But what a welcome sight this is. I believe, unless I'm missing something, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, if Mora comes back, all 14 Breeders' Cup winners in 2024 will race in 2025. I'm very surprised that Sierra Leone is going to come back and race because that's really not Coolmore's style. But thank you, Coolmore, for doing this. We could have last year was the exact opposite. Every single three-year-old, like Two Phils, who's Randy, still thinks is the best horse on the planet. They all retired, every last one of them. This year we got not only that, and Forever Young is coming back too. So the first three finishers in the Breeders' Cup Classic are all coming back to race next year. And it's terrific to see that happening. Let's hope that this is the start of a trend. I don't think it will be, but sure would be nice, though, if it was.
Wouldn't it be awesome just to see them all back next year? And it's Moira. You still haven't watched an episode of Schitt's Creek, have you? Moira.
I have not, no.
You need to watch it.
Moira.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing I would love to see, Forever Young. What I would like to see from Forever Young is a different jockey. And that's no slight on the guy that's been riding him. Put an American jock on the horse that knows the track. Get him a little bit closer and don't go so wide. I know he doesn't love the kickback, but could you imagine if he won the Classic next year? He's been so close in two of his races over here. Just so close. Maybe next year will be the year for him. What do you think, Randy?
Yeah, but I mean, they've said that's what they that's what the trainer said through a translator as soon as the race was over, that we're looking forward to coming back to Breeders' Cup next year at Del Mar. Hopefully he'll make it there. I mean, as you know, hopefully this is not a one off. It's not an aberration. Hopefully it's going to be a trend, because it's great for the sport. The best thing possible for the sport to see all these horses coming back.
Yeah, we already have a rivalry between Sierra Leone and Fierceness. And, you know, they raced against each other four times, both based in the East Coast. They might run against each other two, three more times next year. I mean, it's not quite a firm Dalidar, but it would be about the best we've had in a long, long time. So definitely good news, and hope they all come back. And I hope Moira comes back and runs in North America. How about that?
Thank you, Bill.
Okay.
TD and Riders are brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. We set it up for you a little bit last week, how you could sit in front of your TV, maybe with a split screen. You could keep up with the West Point horses. Boy, did they come through. The horses co-owned by West Point Thoroughbreds and Woodford Racing had a giant day on Saturday. First of all, it was Integration prevailing in the Grade 2 Red Smith Stakes with Woodford Racing colors ridden by Flavian Pratt. You can see Shug McGahee in the winner's circle there after the Red Smith. And boy, what an impressive win it was for Integration. And then about an hour and 45 minutes later, it was Battle of Normandy, also trained by Shug, who scored in the Grade 3 River City Stakes at Churchill Downs. In the process, winning those two races. And also Cugino had a really good second place finish in a graded stakes race on Saturday at Aqueduct as well. West Point achieved a new best for purse earnings in a single year, over $8.9 million, surpassing the previous $8.8 million record from 2022 from West Point that was fueled, of course, by Flightline. Learn more, visit www.westpointtb.com.
All the thrills, fraction of the bills, experience the power of the partnership, change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
All right, a couple more subjects to wrap up before we call it a day. I've been waiting for her to come back. I'm very excited to see Tamara run Friday at Del Mar. And, you know, long before anybody really knew what was going on with Torpedo Anna, she was the one. The Bolt d'Oro out of Beholder, you know, the beloved Beholder. She got off to a great start in her career. Then she stubbed her toe in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies in 2023, but came out of that race with a little bit of an injury. She's been off over a year, but Dick Mandela, Mike Smith are behind her, Spendthrift Farms. Let's not forget about her. If she stays healthy, she could be a major player this year, maybe a good candidate to take on Torpedo Anna at some point.
She's looked really good training down there at Del Mar. I'm not sure how much she's grown. I haven't seen her really in person since the summer. I hope she's grown a little bit, but she's certainly been working well. She does draw the one hole, but her class should prevail in that race at Del Mar. What race is it? It's race number...
Seventh race.
The seventh race at Del Mar, 6:30 Eastern. Definitely looking forward to that.
Oh, there's so much to look forward to. Not just all the Breeders' Cup horses coming back next year, you know, Tamara getting back into gear. Suddenly, all these horses are popping up out of the woodwork. Some more Godolphin two-year-olds, Good Cheer, the filly. Sovereignty, trained by Bill Mott, looked really good. Actually looked like the best three-year-old I've seen so far, breaking his maiden in a stakes race. Chad Brown has a filly named Sins of Parole that looked a lot like Echo Zulu and Ways and Means, breaking her maiden at Saratoga, and then she got hurt. She'll be coming back, hopefully, as a three-year-old in 2024. That's something really to look forward to. Hey, we're going to have a lot to talk about in the coming months if all these horses come back as scheduled.
Now, this is the part of the show I've been most looking forward to. Randy Moss tells us he wants to rant about something, but he won't tell us what it is. So here we go. 3, 2, 1. Randy's mystery rant is...
Randy's rant. I don't like to rant. You know, but
yes, you do.
I don't like to rant about the, you know, the problem with the timing of races, which is the worst it's been since FDR was president. you know, who wants to do that? But sometimes other people don't talk about this stuff. We are left to have to talk about it, and it's got to be mentioned. If you're a serious bettor, a horse player, casual horse player, not really casual horse player, serious horse player, CAW player. If you're somebody like me who will bet some, but also does this as part of your job, right? My job with NBC. You keep up with this stuff. You analyze everything possible in all these races. You look at speed figures. You look at pace figures. You look at final quarter mile closing times. You look at final furlong closing times. Anything to get a slight edge. You watch replays. You watch stewards head-on replays, because they can often tell you something that the regular replay doesn't show. It can be very important. All those things go into really doing your homework, right? On Saturday, November the 2nd, Breeders' Cup Day, the following racetracks ran cards around the country. Arapahoe Downs, Belmont at the Big A, Century Downs, Charlestown, Churchill Downs, Delta Downs, Evangeline Downs, FanDuel, the former Fairmont Park, Gulfstream, Laurel, Lone Star, the Quarter Horses at Los Alamitos, Mahoning Valley, Parks, Remington Park, Turf Paradise, Zia, and of course, Del Mar. Out of that list of tracks, what do you think is the only racetrack that did not make head-on replays available to the horse players?
Del Mar.
Wow.
Tiny.
Championship races of American thoroughbred racing. The only races on that list where you cannot get a head-on replay. You can't get it from the Breeders' Cup website. You can't get it from the Del Mar website. You can't get it from the Roberts Communications purveyors of you know, his replays. He's sort of in control of all. They can't get it from Twin Spires. You can't get it from TRN or RTN anywhere. You can't get it. So it's one of two things. It's either the people that are in charge of this sort of thing aren't aware, which is bad, or they're aware and they don't care, which is even worse. Right? Now, last year, the same thing happened with the Breeders' Cup races at Santa Anita. And Santa Anita took the initiative to reach out to Roberts Communications and say, we need the head-on replays to be out there for the public. And ultimately, they were posted better late than never. Now we're sitting here a week plus from the Breeders' Cup, and still America's championship races, no head-ons available anywhere to watch.
Maybe we could get them for Christmas. Maybe that's what I'll get you for Christmas. Head-on replays for the Breeders' Cup.
There you go.
That is a wrap on this week's show. I want to thank everybody for tuning us in and listening. I want to thank my partners, Zoe Cabman and Randy Moss, and also our people that work so hard behind the scenes, our editors and producers, Katie Petruniak, Anthony Rocca, and then Alita Rocca, and of course, our guests of the week, David and Gordo as well. We'll be back about the same time next week. Thanks for listening.